Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki
jai,
Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai,
Giriraj Maharaj ki
jai,
Janitai Gopri Manam ki
jai.
Okay. So for those of you who are ordering those books, Tamal Krishna Maharaj memorial book, they're here. So if you ask for them, then you can take them tonight with you. So just remind me at the end of the class. So what did we discuss in our previous class? Yeah, that's the first verse in that section. Anything else?
Purifying the intelligence can be done top down or bottom up, but it is preferable to go from engage the senses, purify the senses, purify the mind, and then purify the intelligence. And that is what sadhana bhakti is actually. The bhakti which you are talking, sadhana bhakti, is nothing but we start from the senses, go to the mind, and then go to the intelligence.
Rishikesh or Rishikesh. Anything else?
People have different conditions of mind. Sometimes number of goodness, passion, ignorance, and all of our attachments are in our mind, basically.
Any other points?
It would be a balance between renunciation and fulfillment of desire. Achieve desire. Either extremes are not good. It's a fine balance if one has to strike. Because the very fact that we have come to the material world means we have some desire to fulfill. If we just fulfill those desires in a regulated way, then that is it.
Any other points?
One who spiritualizes his mind and intelligence only by engaging them in the service of Krishna, as we see in the case of Maharaj and Rishikesh, Mataraka, Bhagavad Gita, how he engages all his senses in the service of Lord. And only by that we can purify mind and intelligence.
Any other points?
Concept of thickening the milk. I think it's a very fundamental concept where at some time quality becomes more important than quantity, and even in a sadhana it becomes important. Sometimes we get carried away carrying things, but we do 16 rounds, we do 24 rounds, or 28 rounds. But we should do the 16 rounds first in a qualitatively better manner before we can increase the number.
Any other points?
I think that the senses are fully engaged, the mind and intelligence.
Anything else? So we're hearing about the continuous pastime of Puranjana, and we finished the 25th chapter, which describes how the living entity enters this material world and becomes entangled in the material body, which is compared to a city of 9 gates, and how he is makes a union with his intelligence, who is likened to be the wife, and how he becomes entangled by this material, gross and subtle body of the material world. Now tonight we'll begin chapters 26, and we'll go from verses 1 to 10. And in the 26th chapter is explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary, that the 26th chapter describes the living entity who is too much desiring sense gratification in an unrestricted manner, and how he becomes entangled in sinful reactions. So when the living entity becomes too much absorbed in sense gratification in an unrestricted way, then the result is that he has to suffer many sinful reactions in the real world. So tonight we'll read chapter 26, and we'll go through the first 10 verses, and we'll hear about Maharaj Puranjana's how the allegory continues. Any points? Okay. So, verses 1 to 3. Chapter 26, King Puranjana goes to the forest to hunt, and his queen becomes angry. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, once upon a time, King Puranjana took up his great bow and equipped with golden armor and a quiver of unlimited arrows and accompanied by 11 commanders. He sat on his chariot driven by 5 swift horses and went to the forest named Panchaprastha. He took with him in that chariot 2 explosive arrows. The chariot itself was situated on 2 wheels and 1 revolving axle. On the chariot were 3 flags, 1 rein, 1 chariot driver, 1 sitting place, 2 poles to which the harness, 2 poles to which the harness was fixed, 5 weapons and 7 coverings. The chariot moved in 5 different styles, and 5 obstacles lay before it. All the directions of the chariot were covered. Sorry, all the decorations of the chariot were made of gold."
These 3 verses explain how the material body of the living entity is under the control of 3 qualities of external energy. The body is put in the chariot, and the living entity is the owner of the body. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 13, Deva Asminata Dehi. The owner of the body is called Dehi, and he is situated within this body, specifically within the heart. The living entity is driven by 1 chariot driver. The chariot itself is made up of 3 gunas, 3 qualities of material nature, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:61. Yantra Parudani Mayaya. The word yantra means carriage. The body is given by material nature, and the driver of the body is Paramatma, the super soul. The living entity is seated within the chariot. This is the actual position.
So what are the points in this opening paragraph?
The living entity is in the heart, and the driver is the super soul. And 3 qualities are controlling the body.
Anything else?
The distinction between the body and soul.
Perfectly specifying in the previous chapter of giving the allegory of the senses, mind, intelligence, the complete body, and the relationship. Now, Narada is distinguishing this previous function of the body.
Yeah. So, we see that the living entity, he is simply a passenger on the chariot, meaning that ultimately we are within this material body and we have certain desires that we want to fulfill in this material body, but it is ultimately up to the Paramatma or the super soul to sanction those desires. And therefore Prabhupada has said that man proposes and God disposes. So the living entity is very insignificant. The living entity has material desires and desires to enjoy, and is given a body to fulfill those desires to enjoy, but he's very limited in his capacity. Ultimately, if Krishna does not sanction those desires, then he cannot enjoy. It is not possible. And we see that people sometimes within this material world, they're struck down by severe diseases or accidents or different situations, and then their enjoyment is restricted. So you may have the desire to enjoy, but ultimately it rests with your previous karma and with the Supreme Personality of Godhead sanctioning your desire to enjoy. So the living entity is very limited in this capacity. And the living entity in the material world becomes extremely intoxicated with sense gratification. But factually speaking, the living entity is very limited in what he can enjoy. It is only by the Lord's mercy that he can enjoy some minute so-called sense gratification. So factually speaking, the reality is that the living entity is very limited in their capacity once they come into the material world. Although they become very proud and very intoxicated of their, in terms of their situation. But factually speaking, we're very limited in what we can actually enjoy.
You can give an example, multiple sclerosis. The patient, he cannot evolve or stand or anything because all the neurons, the nerve cells in the brain are destroyed slowly. So he's completely incapacitated. He wants to enjoy, but he can't.
So does the material energy work according to the dictates of Paramatma? It obviously works under his influence, it works under his control, it works under his supervision. But is it that Paramatma is set up within a set of controls and it works according to that controls, or at every stage Paramatma has to sanction, do like this? What is the understanding?
Well, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Yakshena. So he says, by my. The whole material energy works under his glance. So then he sets up his various agents within the material world to facilitate everything on his behalf. So he doesn't directly have to get involved.
The power of visibility, the super soul within the heart. The super soul is a witness of two things, the material nature and basically the soul. He witnesses the soul and understands what inclinations, desires the soul has. He fully understands whether the soul, you know, qualifies in terms of his karmic reactions, he endures his desires. Then, having seen that there is a desire, does he then tell the materiality, yes, take my place, pull them back? Or it happens automatically under his control?
Then the living entity has a desire to enjoy, and the Paramatma realizes what those desires are, and then when the living entity tries to fulfill those desires according to his previous karma, then the Paramatma either sanctions or does not sanction. So all the living entity really can do is enjoy, is desire, but the fulfillment of that desire is dependent upon the Paramatma's sanction. If he sanctions, then he can fulfill his desire. If he does not sanction, then he is restricted. So, you know, people desire to be rich, but not many people become rich. So, so they desire and they work accordingly. But then for some people, it just happens automatically, and other people, it doesn't happen. So, is it clear?
I think I
didn't want to add to that. It is not only the sanctioning of the desire of the jiva, the Paramatma does. Even the functioning of the body is done by the Paramatma. And then you have to look at Prabhupada and say, and the driver of the body, actually the body cannot function, even our sense of liberty, that is all exhibited by the Paramatma. For example, the concept of seeing, man cannot see, but it is through the Paramatma that we are able to see. So the actual driver of the body is Paramatma. It is not only the sanctioning of the desire. As Prabhu said, even the working of that body, which is material, is done by the karma.
Paramatma, as you said, like, he knows all the desires of the human being. Now, the human entity may have many number of desires, many desires. So does Paramatma also help the human entity to get close to God, saying that, you know, these desires are not fulfilling some of them?
living in the Kripa Center.
The desire is wrong, just so you get close to Supreme Lord.
Yeah, because as Paramatma, then we have conscience. Prabhupada explains that our conscience is the Paramatma. Sometimes you do something which is wrong, but in your heart begins to beat very quickly, and you feel there is like an inner voice which is saying, do not do this. This is the Paramatma giving indication. So he is trying to assist the living entity like that. And then externally he appears as the guru. And the devotees, in order to give instruction.
And what happens once we change one body to go to the next body, the same Paramatma accompanies us?
Yeah. Yeah, because Paramatma is, there's only one Paramatma, but he expands unlimitedly. I think so.
And I don't know where I heard this, I don't know how it is true. It says that once the living entity leaves this body, until the time he gets another body, Paramatma goes into Brahmajyoti in the meantime for that time period. Is it true?
No, he goes, he enters back into the body of the previous Vishnu. So Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma, enters back into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And when the universe is destroyed, then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu goes back into Mahavishnu. Okay. Because the Brahmajyoti is the effulgence of Paramatma. Anything else?
So do you see the effulgence of Paramatma or of Bhagavan?
Same person.
Same person.
Ah. So Yogi, can you read the second paragraph?
The living entity is always being influenced by three qualities, sattva, goodness, rajas, passion, tamas, ignorance. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.13, revere gunamai bhavai. The living entity is bewildered by the three qualities of material nature. These three qualities are described in this verse as three flags. By a flag one can come to know who is the owner of the chariot or these. Similarly, by the influence of the three qualities of material nature, one can easily know the direction in which the chariot is moving. In other words, one who has eyes to see can understand how the body is being driven, influenced by a particular type of quality of material nature. In these three verses, the activity of living entity is described to prove how the body becomes influenced by the quality of ignorance. Even when a person wants to be religious, Narada Muni wanted to prove to King Prachina Bhavisha that he was being influenced by tamagun, the quality of ignorance, even though the king was supposed to be very religious.
No, that's good. So what are the points in this second paragraph?
Yeah, Prabhupada is saying that living entity is influenced continuously by the three qualities, more than we can.
Anything else?
I see that basically there are two degrees of basically, I mean, the controllers which are described here. While we are conditioned, we are under the control of Maya. And the Maya acts under the control of Paramatma. So there are two types of control. So the living entity is never independent. It acts under the influence of most of the reality, which acts under the influence of Paramatma.
Any other points?
Then what about the control of the internal energy? Internal energy is also there, but it's not controlling because we are conditioned. Therefore, internal energy is not coming. But once we understand the spiritual energy, then we surrender to spiritual energy. And then the material energy releases completely. That's why we want to surrender.
So one who develops some knowledge, then he can see the modes of nature acting upon various individuals. So as soon as someone begins to act or begins to speak, then you can see what mode of nature they are under. How they're affected by ignorance, or how they're affected by passion, or how they're affected by the mode of goodness. So as one becomes more advanced in Krishna consciousness, then one wants to act more in the mode of goodness, because mode of goodness is conducive for cultivating pure goodness. If one remains too much under the influence of the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance, it is very difficult to advance in spiritual life. So therefore one must come into sattva guna. From sattva guna, Prabhupada explains, that is the springboard to Vishuddha sattva, the pure goodness. So as time goes by, we can observe how the modes are acting on different personalities. And then we can see how the modes are acting upon ourselves. And we have to learn to overcome the negative qualities of the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, which are described elaborately by Krishna in the final chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, such as chapter 14, chapter 16 and chapter 17. It is described. So then one can understand what are the qualities of the modes of ignorance, what are the qualities of the mode of passion, how to avoid those qualities, and how to cultivate the mode of goodness, which is the quality which will assist one to advance spiritually. Any points?
But since the king wanted to be religious, did he want to be religious? Did he desire to be religious?
This king which is being spoken of here is a story.
Yeah, I know, but it says in this line, even when a person wants to be religious, how the body becomes influenced by the qualities of ignorance. Even when a person wants to be religious.
Yeah, but because...
I don't think he wanted to be religious.
No, the Prabhupada at that point is talking about the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. Someone may want to be religious means they're following the Vedic principles, but actually they're influenced by the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Because they're desiring to attain something material.
But that's not religious.
No, it's religious, but it's religion which is nishtraguna of origin. It is religion which is influenced by the three modes of nature. Any other?
If one rises early, attends to the Mangalarti, chants within 16 times of the day, definitely before the sunrise, reads the verse of Bhagavatam, I have heard that more passion and ignorance can be. Krishna immediately invokes protection. So even if this most very powerful begin to act on you, the somehow or other you are protected. Because the vision is established right before this most will begin to act upon you. And so you know, the mode of goodness, while there's so much philosophical detail to understand how it is to be followed, very simple instructions, follow the morning program without fail. And then you know, it's a complete influence.
Yeah, but it's a gradual process. It doesn't happen immediately. You might be doing all those things, but it will take you a long time to fully overcome the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. They become reduced, but that reduction is gradual.
I do personally see my own gifts. The very reason many programs can follow perfectly. I really pass this from them. All the two jobs are done. The mode of passion is good.
So we can't say the modes are not acting.
They're
becoming reduced. We can't say that we've fully transcended the influence of the mode of ignorance and passion. Because if we think that we have prematurely, then we may be tricked once again. So we have to see that we're still under the modes of ignorance and passion. Like that. But it is becoming reduced by a good sadhana. Okay. We should not think that we're beyond the modes prematurely. It takes time to become transcendental to the modes.
This is also what you're saying, revealed by the mercy of Krishna. Without Krishna mercy, even the mode will never leave us.
no matter what we do. They are so strong and wicked, you can say. They don't want to leave us. Under the mercy of Krishna or the spiritual master.
I heard in one of the classes, and it says like, as long as you are in this body, you cannot get rid of these three modes. There is a constant struggle going on between the supremacy of the modes. And just by sadhana, you can only make your mode of movement stronger and the other two modes dormant state. But as you mentioned in the last class, Maya just takes an inch and just needs an inch and it pulls a mile. So, as soon as we become stuck in sadhana, as Prabhu mentioned, the mode of passion and ignorance become more stronger and they take over. But as long as you are in this material body, the modes, all the three modes remain.
Yeah, but then one can become transcendent to the influence of the mode, which is what Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Gita. So it means that Prabhupada explains it's like the coconut becomes separated from the outer shell. Someone like Prabhupada, he was in this world. So his body may have been affected by the modes, meaning that, you know, certain things, reactions go on, but internally he's completely detached from the outer shell. So you can transcend the modes. It doesn't mean that the body is always affected. Just like Prabhupada got sick and these things happen like that. But it doesn't mean that the consciousness is affected. That's the point. So even though the modes do not stop like that in the material body, but we can transcend the influence of the modes by Krishna consciousness.
But is it possible for a common person, obviously Srila Prabhupada was not a common person, but for a common person who is working in a daily life and kind of is interacting with non-devotees all the time and living as a normal grihastha, so is it possible for him to transcend modes?
It's up to you. Prabhupada said it's all about desire. Prabhupada said you can become Krishna conscious in one moment if you desire. But if your desire is not strong, then you'll just be one of these ordinary grihasthas. Bahu Janmakati Yadishwara. You just keep coming back as an ordinary grihastha. Except you'll become the wife and think you'll become the husband and then you'll have to cook. And then you can swap over again. But if you have a strong desire, then you can transcend your thoughts. That's our philosophy. We shouldn't think it's not possible. We shouldn't say, oh, well, that was Prabhupada. But no, you're also a pure devotee potentially. All of us were pure devotees previously. So we should not relate too much to our present condition. We should not think that I will be conditioned continuously. We can break our conditioning at any moment. If you fully surrender to Krishna. Any other point? So we'll go to the fifth paragraph. So Uddhava Bandhu, can you read the fifth paragraph?
According to Karma Kandiya, the first step of activity.
No, no, that's the third. Fifth. You guys should count. You went to university all those years, you should.
This hearing described that King Pranjana once went to the forest to kill animals. This means that he, the living entity, came under the influence of the mode of the forest. The forest is forest in which King Pranjana engaged in hunting was named Panjaprastha. The word Pancha means five. And this indicates the object of the five senses. The body has five working senses, namely the hands, the legs, the tongue, the rectum, and the genitals. By taking full advantage of these working senses, the body enjoys material life. The chariot is driven by five forces, which represent the five sense organs, namely the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue. These sense organs are very easily attracted by the sense object. Consequently, the horses are described as moving swiftly. On the chariot, King Pranjana kept two explosive weapons, which may be compared to ahankar or false ego. This false ego is typified by two attitudes. I am this body, akanta, and everything in my bodily relationship belongs to me, Amata.
So what do we learn from this paragraph?
I am mind is very hard to bear.
Anything else?
Aham mamiti, me and my belonging.
So Prabhupada is analyzing the allegory here of Paranjana going into the forest. So he says that the word panchaprastha means the five objects of the senses. So the living entity becomes mad and bewildered and illusioned by the sense objects. And that's compared to the chariot going into the forest. You go into the forest to enjoy. Or the king goes in the forest to hunt, like that. So this is like the living entity. He drives the chariot very quickly. Just like when the horses are very powerful, the horses are the senses. So the senses going towards the sense objects, they travel very quickly, very powerful. So this is the allegory which he's speaking to the king to make him understand this is the situation you are currently in this material world. And then it is described that the chariot is driven by the five horses. The sense organs are very easily attracted to the objects, and there are two explosive weapons, two arrows which he had, which are aham and mameti. Aham mameti, now this is false ego, I and mine. In our original ego we think I am Krishna's servant and Krishna is my master. That is real ego. The false ego, we think I am the enjoyer and so many things belong to me. That is false ego. So in this natural mentality of being Krishna's servant and thinking that we belong to Krishna and Krishna belongs to us, when that becomes perverted, then we become under the influence of aham mameti, which is material consciousness. This is false ego. And this is what keeps us bound in this material world perpetually. So, any points here?
Can you please tell me again? Mameti. Aham means enjoy. And mameti is?
Means mine.
Mine.
I am mine.
I think they said we should replace I, me, mine with he, him, and me.
Who
says that? Yeah, he said that we should replace I, me, mine with he, him, and me. Because he, him, and me. For he, him, and me.
Here the story is going on, and Kedar Muni is continuing the clarification according to what he is trying to discuss. Just narrating the story.
Yeah.
How can the king who is involved in the story in the material activities can understand what the same is trying to say?
He's very intelligent. Just by hearing it, he can understand what he's meaning. We need to have the purport.
The next chapter, if you allow me. The next chapter, not only explains this thing.
Yeah.
He explains all this and that.
And also, it is there that the in previous ages, people were far more intelligent and they could understand things. That even when they spoke in a subtle way, that they could understand. Whereas these days, we need purports to understand all of these points. To have an explanation. Any other point? So then, it describes in the next paragraph, Prabhupada explains that this body, this material body, and the activities of the body, when the body is trying to, the senses are trying to enjoy sense gratification, they are obstacles to the path of liberation. So as long as we identify with the body and with the sense objects which we can enjoy with the body, then it will be very difficult for us to extract ourselves from the influence of the material energy. You'll always be under the influence of the material energy, and that's why Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita by explaining you're not the body. And that's why Prabhupada would always emphasize in his lectures that we are not the body. Because as long as you identify with the body in bodily consciousness and sense gratification, then you cannot reach the ultimate goal of spiritual life, which is to become extracted from the material energy altogether. Okay, so we'll read the seventh paragraph. So, Sridhara Bhagavad, can you read the seventh paragraph? We just read the fifth.
The word rasmi, rope, in this verse indicates the mind. The word nida is also significant, for nida indicates the nest where the bird takes rest. In this case, nida is the heart, where the living entity is situated. The living entity sits in one place only. The cause of this bondage are two, namely lamentation and illusion. In material existence, the living entity simply hankers to get something he can never get. Therefore, he is in illusion. As a result of being in this illusory situation, the living entity is always lamenting. Thus, lamentation and illusion are described herein as dibhikubhaga, the two first of bondage.
Hmm. So what is said in this paragraph? Krishna says the Brahma Bhuta Prasana Naso Chiti Nakangshiti. So this is spiritual platform. When we understand we are Brahma Bhuta, means we are a spiritual personality, Prasanatma. We become satisfied in our spiritual identity. The Naso Chiti Nakangshiti. The one will not hanker or lament. As long as we are influenced by the material energy, then we will hanker, we will lament in this material world. So therefore, now the living entity, he needs to develop spiritual consciousness, become self-realized, become God-realized, Krishna-conscious. So this is the purpose of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. We become self-realized souls, God-conscious souls. And then we will not identify with the material world, and therefore we will not be affected by material hankering and lamentation. Then, in the final paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada explains that the golden ornaments and dress which are decorating the chariot, they are considered to be manifestations of the mode of passion. When one is very influenced by Rajagun, one becomes attached to gold. People want to possess a lot of gold or a lot of wealth, a lot of money. When someone wants to possess a lot of money or a lot of wealth, a lot of gold, this is the influence of the mode of passion. And this mode is very detrimental to spiritual progress. If you become too much attached to the glitter of gold, that's why Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, one who is self-realized sees stones, pebbles, and gold as the same. He does not become influenced. But the materialists, they become very influenced by the glitter of gold. Just like I was on an aeroplane one time, I was flying, I think up to Sydney or something, and the girls were sitting in front of us, and one of the girls said to the other one, she said, "Oh, such and such, our friend, she got engaged. And her fiancé gave her a diamond wedding engagement ring." And the other girl said, "Diamonds? Diamonds?" And then she said, "Yes, he gave diamonds." Right? So this is the influence of the mode of passion. Right? That we think that we need to possess great wealth and great opulence. Mm-hmm. But it is simply the covering of the chariot. It is simply the covering of the body. That's why devotees, we don't become so interested in these things. We dress simply, we don't need to wear expensive things. Mataji's can wear it, and that is their nature. But the men should stay simple and stay renounced. The women can wear some gold and some jewels like that, and some silk saris like that, but not too much. Don't become too an heaven buyer like that. Any points? Okay, so read text 4. It was almost impossible for King Paranjana to give up the company of his queen, even for a moment. Nonetheless, on that day, being very much inspired by the desire to hunt, he took up his bow and arrow with great pride and went to the forest, not caring for his wife.
One form of hunting is known as woman hunting. A conditioned soul is never satisfied with one wife. Those whose senses are very much uncontrolled especially try to hunt for many women. King Paranjana, abandoning the company of his relationship, married wife, is representative of the conditioned soul's attempt to hunt for many women for self gratification. Wherever a king goes, he is supposed to be accompanied by his queen. But when the king or conditioned soul become greatly overpowered by the desire for self gratification, he doesn't care for religious principles. Instead of great pride, he accepts the bow and arrows of attachment and hatred. Our consciousness is always working in two ways, the right way and wrong way. When one becomes too proud of his position, influenced by the mode of fashion, he gives up the right path and accepts the wrong way. Kshatriya kings are sometimes advised to go to the forest to hunt ferocious animals, just to learn how to kill. But such forays are never meant for sun gratification. Killing animals, be it their flesh, is forbidden for humans.
So, any interesting points here?
On the translation of the verse, one can understand that when the desire for sense gratification is very strong, intelligence is forsaken. In this case, the king leaves his wife and goes to the forest. That means the intelligence is forgotten. Forsaken in the pursuit of satisfying one's desire. And that's what I think also in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, lust with your enemy, because that covers the intelligence.
Anything else?
And lust is because of the false ego.
So Krishna explains in the same section of the Bhagavad Gita, in the end of the third chapter, he says that lust can never be desired, can never be fulfilled. No matter how much you have materially, if you're a lusty person, you will never be satisfied. Just like we see in the case of Hiranyakashipu, he conquered the universe, but still he was not satisfied. And then his son, Prahlad, he said to him, although you are such a great conqueror, and you have conquered the entire universe, but still you have not conquered your greatest enemy, which is your uncontrolled mind. So the mind, which is uncontrolled, which is lusty, or lusty intelligence, this is the real enemy of the soul. And one cannot progress in spiritual life as long as the mind is not properly controlled. So if one is too much lusty, then one cannot properly progress in spiritual life or in Krishna consciousness. And lust will never be satiated. It does not matter how much you have, you'll never be satiated. And we see that. The people, just like you see some people, they become millionaires. But it is still, it is not enough for them. Still they're feeling like they need more. That is the nature of the material energy. Just like you see some of the great musicians and so forth of recent times, they've become so wealthy and still they feel like they need more, and when they pass away they keep all the money in their family, they just give all the money to their son instead of spreading the money evenly amongst proper organisations and so forth. This is simply material consciousness. So, any points? Okay. At that time, King Puranjana was very much influenced by demoniac propensities. Because of this, his heart became very hard and merciless. And with sharp arrows, he killed many innocent animals in the forest, taking no consideration. Chaitanya Prabhu, can you read?
When a man becomes fearful of his material position, he tries to enjoy his senses in an unrestricted way. Being influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, he is thus described as asuric or demonic. When people are demonic in spirit, they are not merciful towards the poor animals. Consequently, they maintain various animal slaughterhouses. This is technically called suna or himsa, which means the killing of living beings. In Kaliyuga, due to increase of the modes of passion and ignorance, almost all men are asuri or demoniac. Therefore, they are very much fond of eating flesh, and for this end, they maintain various kinds of animal slaughterhouses.
So what are the points in this chapter?
When one is driven by desire, then selfishness, one tends to become extremely selfish. In that way, one loses compassion, sense of compassion. And when one is extremely selfish, one becomes very sinful. Because all acts of sin are nothing but reflections of selfishness, degrees of selfishness.
Any other points?
Also, from the first time you can understand that like, man Varnashram Dharma is not followed, as with Baby Varnashram Dharma is not followed, as with Varnashram, and people have become more asuric and fall down. And that is why it says man becomes proud of his material position. That's because men were on that position like Sudras, not the proper Brahmins. Exactly. So that is why you see all these things happen.
One of the effects of the mode of passion is that the heart becomes very hard, completely merciless. And although one is in the uniform of God, we can easily come to the platform of accepting flesh as a food. And then using the slaughterhouses and giving them just vehicles. So the slaughterhouses are just, although it is considered as purely the mode of ignorance, is originated from the mode of passion.
Now, Prabhupada is emphasizing here that when one becomes too heavily influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance, which is basically modern civilization. When Prabhupada arrived on the Jaladutta in Boston Harbor in 1965, then he said that all that he saw when he looked at the Boston skyline was ignorance and passion. Because basically that's what the world has become under the influence of. It's very powerful now. Ignorance and passion have virtually become, or they've become far too prominent within human society. So what is the result of when it all becomes too prominent? Then one tries to enjoy oneself in an unrestricted manner. One cannot control one's senses. It's very difficult these days for people to control their senses. Just like in summertime, you just go to the beach and the people are mostly naked. Practically, you know, 90% of their body is exposed like that. So that is a society which is under the influence of passion and ignorance. Even now, like if you go to India, when I go to Puri and we go to the beach, but people don't dress in that way. People still cover the body to a great degree because there's less passion, less ignorance is there. So when one becomes too much influenced by these modes, then one acts in a particular way. And then one becomes unrestricted in one's sense gratification. It's very hard to control the senses. Just like if you want to practice brahmacharya, then it's not good to go to the beach in summertime. You go down to the beach in summertime, and it's very hard to control your mind. Very hard to control your senses. Because that is the way the modern culture is. And then it becomes very difficult to progress in spiritual life it becomes very difficult to encourage others to take to the spiritual path. Because you encourage them, you say, please also follow this spiritual path, but they find it almost impossible. They say, it's not possible. It's not possible to control the senses, to act in a restricted way, to avoid these illicit activities. Because one's consciousness has become too unrestricted. So Prabhupada explains as this purport goes on, that the Vedic culture is based upon restricting sense gratification. Sense gratification must be restricted if one wants to attain liberation. Prabhupada criticizes the bogus yogis and gurus who have come from India in the last 40 years, that they claim that you can, some of them say that if you have desire, then maximize trying to fulfill your desire, then the desire will decrease. But as Prabhupada explains to us, based on Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, the more you put fuel on the fire, the more it grows. So in the Vedic system, we're not encouraged to be unrestricted in our sense gratification. We must restrict our sense gratification. We must practice a life of regulation. And by following a regulated life, then gradually one loses one's taste for sense gratification and one develops renunciation. So then you have to make arrangements in your life not to put yourself in a position where you're too influenced by the material energy. Because you watch the television and you listen to the media and you involve yourself in the internet, then your consciousness is continuously bombarded by the material energy. Even sometimes I go to my mother's place or something and the television is on. You just watch it half an hour practically at any time of the day these days, and practically your consciousness becomes contaminated. Because the whole world is full of unrestricted sense gratification. Practically you just turn on the internet, and then as soon as you turn it on, you go onto any site, there's something on the site, you know, which is polluting the consciousness, like that. So this is the nature of the material energy these days. So one has to withdraw oneself from that. So it is very good if you are computer illiterate. That is very advantageous to Krishna consciousness. If you are not computer illiterate, then you should break your hard drive. That will also be very beneficial. Any other points?
I was talking to one of you guys this afternoon, and he was just talking about the most of the passion makers are so prominent. I was just bringing up the point here. He said, if you have a dairy farm, the price of water would be charged much higher to you in comparison to having a farm where which feeds animals which are going to be
yeah. Yeah, it's called nonsense.
So they're pushing more to eat flesh than having any products which are more.
Yeah, because that industry, the meat industry, is subsidized heavily by the government. In America, it is very heavily subsidized. Otherwise, it's not possible for them to produce the human consumption. It's very expensive to do it. So therefore, in order to restrict it, or so it does not become restricted, then they have to heavily subsidize it. Because the politicians are very addicted to eating flesh. So they give money. Okay. And if you grow a vegetable, they give you less money. Any other points? Where are we up to? 6 minutes. If a king is too attracted to eating flesh, he may, according to the directions of the revealed scriptures on sacrificial performances, go to the forest and kill some animals that are recommended for killing. One is not allowed to kill animals unnecessarily or without restrictions. The Vedas regulate animal killing to stop the extravagance of foolish men influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Siddhi Roger.
The question may be raised, why a living being should be restricted in sense gratification? If a king to learn to how to kill may go to the palace, forest and kill animals, why should a living entity whose feelings and senses not be allowed unrestricted sense gratification? At the present moment, these arguments put forward, even by so-called swamis and yogis, who publicly say that because we have senses, we must satisfy them by sense gratification. These foolish swamis and yogis, however, do not know the intentions of the sastras. Indeed, sometimes the sastras come out to defy the sastras. They even publicly announce that there should be no sastras, no books. Just come to me, they say, and I shall touch you and you will be completely spiritually enhanced.
So as Prabhupada mentions, that restriction is necessary. Even though the modern propaganda by the pseudo-spiritualists and by the modern politicians and the modern leaders of society, then they're teaching us the opposite. That if you enjoy your senses unlimitedly, then that's how you'll become happy. But according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who practices this demoniac principle of unrestricted, unregulated sense gratification, na sukham, na param gati. Krishna says in the 16th chapter of the Gita, na sukham, you cannot be happy, and na param gati, you will not attain the supreme destination. So this is the great flaw of the modern civilization, that they're teaching everyone that you just try to enjoy yourself and you'll become happy. And the more unrestricted you are and the more sense gratification you get, the happier you will become. But factually it is the opposite. Real happiness comes from living life in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means restricting one's sense gratification, regulating one's sense gratification. Sense gratification in Vedic culture means taking prasadam. That is our sense gratification. Right? Because everything else we don't have. We don't do what all the others do. We don't do what the non-devotees do. But our food is better. Even they say that. Right? Our food is better. Our prasadam is better. And therefore the devotees, when they become regulated and they control their senses, they're happy. Because we have such nice prasadam to eat. So we're happy. Our senses are satisfied. Just like if your senses get a little bit agitated, then what do? Yeah, you have gulabs. Right? Oh, you have halva or something like that. Just like my mind's a bit disturbed, I just eat sweets. the program. And then give your mind some sense gratification. Right? And then you'll become peaceful. Like that. As the system. Because the mind needs a certain amount of sense gratification. So the sense gratification for devotees is for prasadam, which purifies the consciousness. We don't go into unrestricted activities. Just like I remember some of the brahmacharis, they used to get very agitated. Their minds would be disturbed and they go to the cool room and they'd eat like 10 rasgullas at one time. So that is not recommended. Prabhupada said for the first 6 months, you can eat so much that you waddle like a duck. But after that, then you have to control your senses. Except for gulabs. Everything else though. Any other points?
To the degree of the scriptures, I don't think that they recommend any animal killing. The animal killings are not only if you give new life to the old.
Yeah, or in the case of the chaturis are allowed to kill some animals in the forest to practice their weaponry.
But the ferocious
animals? Yeah, or deer, so they can also kill the deer. Some animals they're allowed to kill. Not that. But it's restricted, doesn't mean anyone can do it. And even the chaturis, they cannot do it unlimitedly.
Why do you kill the deer?
Because the skin of the deer is very auspicious, and they use that for the brahmanas and the brahmacharis and so forth. They wear the deer skin, and it's also used to sit on by the sages and so forth. So they kill some of the deer. There must be some permission given that they can do that. So, any other point? Narad Muni continued to speak to the king, Prachina Bahishat. My dear king, any person who works according to the directions of the Vedic scriptures does not become involved in fruitive activities. So Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport that the Vedas ultimately, they emanate from Krishna himself. So many of the other teachings in the world and the laws in the world are coming from the minds of men. So therefore they are flawed. They have defects. Even when Lord Chaitanya, when he spoke to the Chankazi, he said that your Quran, it is coming from the minds of men. Which means it's not that it is not divinely inspired, but it is still affected by the modes of nature. Whereas the Vedic literatures are directly emanating from the Lord himself. And by following the Vedic literatures, then you'll gradually become elevated. Although Krishna himself says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. So therefore, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as devotees of followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and devotees of Krishna, we study that portion of the Vedas which deals with transcendental subject matter. That's why the Bhagavad Gita begins by saying it rejects Kaitava Dharma, or subject matter which is influenced by the modes of nature. And devotees are simply interested in hearing the transcendental portion of the Vedas, the Bhakti Shastras. Because by studying the Bhakti Shastras, one becomes elevated in consciousness. One transcends the material energy by hearing the transcendental sound vibration of the Bhakti Shastras. So, any points? No, it means it's divinely inspired. It's a bona fide religion, but it's affected by the modes of nature. Whereas even the Vedas, people who follow the Vedic literatures are affected by the modes of nature. Those who follow the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas are affected by the modes of nature. But those who follow the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, because that portion of the Vedas is transcendental to the modes of nature, by following those, you will also become elevated in consciousness. And gradually you'll begin to transcend the modes. Anything else? Otherwise, a person who acts whimsically falls down due to false prestige. Thus he becomes involved in the laws of nature, which are composed by the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. In this way, a living entity becomes devoid of his real intelligence and becomes perpetually lost in the cycle of birth and death. Thus he goes up and down from a microbe in the stool to a high position in the Brahmaloka planet. So we'll read the second paragraph. So, Sharada Raj on that? Can you read the second paragraph?
The living entities in this conditioned world are an eternal segment of thought. Due to conditioned life, they are describing their heart in the six senses, which include the mind.
It's on the next page. If you go across to the next page, then the paragraph begins, the word.
The word manaradha is also very significant in this verse. Under the pretext of becoming great philosophers and scientists, men throughout the whole world are working on the mental platform. Such men are generally non-devotees. Due to not caring for the instructions given by the Lord to the first living creature, Lord Rama, the Bhagavatam, the 5:18:10, Kuto Mahatguna, Mano, A person who is non-devotee has no disqualification because he acts on the mental platform. One who acts on the mental platform has to change his standard of knowledge periodically. We constantly see that one philosopher may disagree with another philosopher, and one scientist may put forward a theory contradicting the theory of another scientist. All this is due to their working on the mental platform without a standard of knowledge. In the Vedic instructions, however, the standard of knowledge is accepted, even though it may sometimes appear that the statements are contradictory. Because the Vedas are the standard of knowledge, even though they may appear contradictory, they should be accepted. If one does not accept them, he will be bound by the material condition.
So Prabhupada is emphasizing at this point that the Vedic knowledge does not change. It is perpetual, it is consistent. So therefore, it is meant for humanity, it is the law books for humanity. So if one follows the Vedic teachings, one will get the result, no matter what the time, place and circumstance is. Whereas these days, people, they change the laws continuously. One country has one set of laws, and then next door the other country has a different set of laws. And there can never be proper happiness or proper peace in society as long as one conducts the country under the laws which are emanating from the minds of conditioned souls. So therefore, the Vedic laws do not change. They're spoken by the Mahajans, and they are followed continuously. And whenever we follow the Vedic teachings, then we will receive the result. And what is the result? We become happy and satisfied and peaceful in this material world. And then, at the end, we attain the supreme destination. That is the result of following the Vedas. And if you follow the Vedic principles, you will be happy in this world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, there is nothing lacking in this world except Krishna consciousness. So if you have Krishna consciousness, this world is fine. Except it's the material world, but it's satisfying. One can be happy, one can be satisfied, and then at the end, if one practices bhakti, one can attain the supreme abode, param gati. Any points?
Does this mean that we should follow the karmakanda portion of that?
What do you think?
I think it says that the Veda should be followed.
Now, what do you think?
I don't think it should be.
And that is the answer.
Only the
Bhakti Shastras. Not the Karma Kanda portion. You should worship Tulsi Devi.
Okay.
Not perform Indra Puja. Do not become confused by the flowery words of the Vedas. Is it okay? When King Paranjana was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. So, the entire material world at this point in time is engaged in sinful activity. People everywhere eating meat, taking intoxication, having illicit sex, and gambling. That is basically what most people's weekends are constituted of. Work hard all week, work like a dog, so then on the weekend you can break the four regulative principles. Kali Yuga ki. This is the lifestyle of the masses, isn't it? And the more you can break the four regulative principles on the weekend, the more successful your life is. And then you come to work on Monday, and that's what you talk about at lunchtime. And that's life in the material world. So therefore, Prabhupada explains the devotees feel very compassionate about the sinful activities, and they preach very vigorously to try to turn the tide of Kali Yuga. That's why, for example, at Hare Krishna Valley, we protect the cows. We only have 4 cows left, very old, but they are protected, they're living peacefully. And we, whenever people come, then we make this point to them. We will not kill the cows. And we preach very vigorously against animal slaughter, unnecessary killing. Just like one very good documentary, one very good movie has just come out, it's called Food Inc. So you have permission to go and see this film, or else it is out on DVD already also. So it describes the way the modern civilization are treating animals and how they are living and treating the earth and the food in order to create profit. And it's a very unbalanced way to live, and it is creating great problems in the world these days. So the devotees feel very bad about these things, and we preach very vigorously against these things, and we try to convince people to follow a sattvic way of life, to eat food which can be offered to Krishna. That is the way we try to influence the world. Take prasad. So we distribute as much prasadam as possible, and then we invite others to also practice this diet. Food which can be offered to Krishna. Not untouchable foods. And then we'll read the last verse for tonight. In this way, King Paranjana killed many animals, including rabbits, boars, buffalo, bison, black deer, porcupines, and other game animals. After killing and killing, the king became very tired. So Prabhupada explains in the first paragraph that just because one is in ignorance, it does not free one from reaction. People think, well, I don't know any better, then I will not get reactions. But no, if you eat meat as a human being, then you will get reactions. Your life will become chaotic, and you will receive sinful reactions for your activities. Sometimes people say, well, I do not believe in these things. But whether you believe or don't believe, it doesn't mean that these things will not happen. The laws of nature are the laws of nature. Just like if you jump off the top of the building, you'll fall down into the lake. You'll fall down into the ground, and you may break your leg. So that is the law of nature. You cannot avoid it. So similarly, the law of karma is a subtle law, but it is unavoidable. So people think, well, I am in ignorance, I do not know. Because just because you do not know something does not mean you will not get a reaction. Prabhupada says, if you touch the fire, you get burnt. That's the reaction. So similarly, if you commit sinful activities, there will be reactions to these things. So once again, Prabhupada encourages us to preach and to try to influence people in the other way. So whenever you are in your workplace, you should distribute as much prasadam as possible, and you should try to influence other people to come to Krishna consciousness. Just like His Grace Sadananda Prabhu, who used to live here, Adi Purush Krishna Prabhu's son. Now he lives in Christchurch, but he used to work in one of the offices here in Melbourne, and he had everyone on the floor. There was 20 or 30 people working in his section in the office. He would not answer them unless they said Hare Bol. If they walked past him and said hello or good morning, he would ignore them. And the only answer he would give them is they said Hare Bol. So in the morning he got the whole office. And he would say Hare Bol, and everyone would say Hare Bol. And he'd wear his tilak to work. And everyone, if they knew his Hare Krishna, they'd all say Hare Bol. And then once a month, they'd have a staff meeting, and he'd organize the whole staff meeting to be in Gopal's every month. And they all very much like the prasad. So this is Krishna consciousness. Wherever you are, whoever you meet, then you should somehow give them Krishna. And this is the spirit of the devotee, to try to turn the people of the world so the whole world becomes part of the Hare Krishna movement.
What's that? Unless
you're
very lucky to get an office
like
that, then
you can
spread.
You can spread it in any office.
Yeah, we need influence on the office.
wasn't because the office was very lucky, it's because he was very sincere and determined to help that. You can do it in your office as well. But maybe you can get them to say Haribol. Yeah, and maybe you'll get saved. But Krishna will give you another job. Yeah. Everything happens to Bodhis, and that's Krishna's arrangement. Okay, so if you've ordered these books, I have these TKG memorial books there. So if you've ordered it, then you can take it and you can give me the money, the $50 next week. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.